Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Brothers Lehman Sports Happy Hour. We are your hosts, Chris.
And Jonathan.
We got a special guest with us tonight, or today. Joining us is the host of the Single Simulcast, Rashani. What's going on, man?
Nothing much. I'm glad to be on, fellas. I really do appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on. We're jumping into, finals. Basketball's over with. Miami, Spurs blew it. Fuck all that. Spurs blew it.
Yeah.
But, Miami pulls it out. Games 6 and 7 were awesome to watch, except for the endings for me. You can't get no better than that. 30 seconds left. It's a close game. It's anybody's game. LeBron, they dared him to shoot all series, and he was bricking.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, game 7, it's like, oh, my jumper is finally here. Y'all can't stop me. I'm hitting threes now.
Exactly.
It was nasty. Felt really bad for Tim Duncan, though. I mean, the guy who has been, and you can argue, is the best power forward of all time.
Definitely.
And for him to lose the game pretty much on that missed layup of his that could have tied the game at 90, I know that was a bad feeling for him. Because then after that, it was lights out.
I think I can say nobody wanted this game more than Tim Duncan, because he, of all people, had to feel like they should have won game 6.
Yep.
So for him to not only have the ball in the final few seconds and be going up against a guy who is smaller than him in both stature and height, he had to be licking his chops. So for him to have that and then get that straightaway layup, oh, man, at that point in time, he was praising whatever god he worshipped, the god of boredom, the god of straight face, whatever he worships, he was on him. And then God was like, I'm the one true God, and he closed the rim, and it just bounced off. And somewhere out there, Patrick Ewing was doing his Dougie. He was thank you legging, because that was so reminiscent of when Patrick Ewing went straight down the middle. Straight down the middle against the Pacers, and it just like iron unkind, and I felt badly for Tim, but I feel worse for the folks who probably won't get to this opportunity again. If Tim Duncan retires, I don't think the Spurs will come back.
I don't think he'll retire this year. I do agree. I was with you 100% on that. As soon as he missed that layup, all I saw was that Patrick Ewing brick. He wore it on his face. His interview, his post-game interview was like one of the saddest sports things I've ever seen in my life. He looked dejected, disappointed. For a guy that everybody says doesn't show any emotion at all, you could feel it through the screen.
Mm-hmm.
That this guy was hurt. He wanted it. He could taste it. Yeah, game 6. They're bringing the ropes out. Even hearing Ray Allen talk about put them fucking yellow ropes away.
Mm-hmm.
As a Spurs fan, I'm still not ready to count them out yet. If we're going to hate on one player specifically, all of us are going to be blaming Ginobili.
True.
He made turnovers in game 6 by himself.
Yeah.
Just killed it. I questioned Popovich a little bit when he took Duncan out. I was like, why the fuck are you taking Duncan out? I was like, you're about to win. Leave him on the court. Let him be on the court when he wins. And couldn't get a rebound. And, hey, we still had a chance. But, yeah, that layup, I hope it's not the end for him coming back. But he knew he got basically inches from holding that championship.
And here's a question I got for you.
Uh-huh.
I was thinking about this, and it's been going through my head for a while. It's been on my heart. When somebody says something's been on their heart, they ain't saying nothing nice to you. But how much more do you think, not even Tim Duncan, how much more do you think Manu has in his tank? Because being a international player, they tend to start playing ball at like 14, 15 years old. They go real hard in the paint at a very early age, and then they come to the NBA where they continue to go hard in the paint. Plus, with Olympics and all that kind of stuff, he's got as much tread on his legs, I would assume, as Tim Duncan, if not more. So do you think that he's starting to taper off a little bit? Like maybe this is the fall-off area that he was going through?
Yeah, in the last few years, he's been falling off. Yeah, you can see it. He just doesn't make those clean passes. He's not going to the rim as hard as he used to. I don't think he's going to retire, but
his role will be limited.
Yeah, they will have to start.
He will be on a minute count, probably in the low 20s, to keep his body fresh. That's the only way I see it working with Ginobili. Plus, I think he's done playing ball with Argentina this summer. If I recall right, I think he said he's not doing that this summer. Because right now, he has a 40-year-old body, 40-plus. Because, I mean, with the wear and tear he's been taking through international play, NBA play, the practices, the injuries, everything, he's definitely going to have to be on a minute count. If he doesn't come back to San Antonio, he will retire. I don't think he's going anywhere else. But if he does come back, he will definitely be limited, and you'll definitely see Danny Green taking more of his minutes, Gary Neal. And, I mean, I think you just saw that. You saw that throughout the series with Green and Gary Neal getting a lot of minutes, Kawhi Leonard getting a lot of minutes. I mean, that's the future of their squad.
Yeah, Ginobili he's basically a role player at this point. He is.
Yep.
He's no longer. Well, you can't count him as part of the big three anymore. You can in nostalgia sense, but in order for the Spurs to actually get back to this point regularly, he's going to have to be replaced.
And I think he has been by Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard showed his game and showed that he has emerged as a borderline superstar in this league throughout that series with Miami. And to me, Game 7 was the icing on the cake. I mean, you saw he – of all the Spurs, minus Tim Duncan, gave like everything he had, including guarding LeBron James. You putting up 19 points, 16 rebounds, and you guarding LeBron one-on-one. He gets nothing but kudos from me for his performance.
No, he's a star. I mean, he's one of the – to me, there were three stars that came out in these playoffs. Steph Curry, Paul George, and Kawhi Leonard is the third one. This dude, if he keeps – get better every year, he's going to be scary. We all knew he could play defense, and all of a sudden he started having a consistent three, and now you're seeing him, he's starting to have a little floater and a little drive to him. I'm like, oh, shit, okay. And he just learned he's that Tim Duncan silent assassin. Like, I heard he's quieter than Tim Duncan.
He's very quiet. He doesn't really say much. He's a California guy. I remember him when he was at San Diego State. He was a beast, but he doesn't really talk a lot. He doesn't like Tim Duncan. He doesn't express a whole lot of emotion. And, you know, ain't nothing wrong with that. He'd be a quiet assassin.
Yeah, he can be. And yeah, he will be. So I'm not gonna be the one to say the Spurs are done. I mean they were supposed to
be done
losing against Memphis 2 years ago. You know, they are still a championship contending team. You know, will they get back? I don't know. But I mean, they got as good of a chance as anybody.
I think as long as they still got Pop, you always got a chance.
I'm not gonna go and say straight out that they're done. What I was saying is that if Timmy chooses to hang it up, which given the off season that he's looking forward to, you know, the stress from a divorce, things of that nature, might be a possibility. I'm just speculating. If he does, Tiago Splitter is not going to take Tim Duncan's place.
Hell no.
So at that point in time, it becomes Tony Parker, an aging, already appropriately aging Manu Ginobili, Kawhi Leonard, and Danny Green. They become a much smaller team. And then the Clippers just, you know, they'll keep growing with Chris Paul signed back up and Blake Griffin being there and everything. They'll keep growing. And the Lakers, they might be down for a little bit, but the Thunder are going to keep on going up, and it's going to be difficult for them.
If there's there's one thing I got to say that the Spurs got going for them is that they're one of the premium drafting teams in the league. They continuously draft in the 20s, and they always seem to find the perfect players that fit their system. They drafted George Hill, and it flipped him for Kawhi Leonard. Look at drafting Tony Parker in the late 20s. They drafted Manu Ginobili in the second round. Tim Duncan was just the luck of the Irish. That was just a fluke number one pick they had and got him. But most of their players are either undrafted or European, or they just drafted late in the 20s, and they fit the system. So, I mean, I will have faith in the Spurs. I don't think they're just going to completely fall off because they draft too well.
True, very true.
Yeah, they have enough. I'm looking at them. They have enough cap space. I mean, Ginobili, he was making 14. He's probably going to make 5
if that.
He resigns. Yeah, he ain't getting that much. Steven Jackson's not there no more. So they'll have the money. Of course, it's always with San Antonio. Can they get at least a above-average player who's willing to sign with them as a free agent? That's always the big question.
You got to find the Popovich kind of guy.
Yeah, but I agree with you, Rashawn. It is time for them now to fully, really make that change to it being Parker's team. You got Kawhi Leonard, who you know is going to be a star. You basically have to, in a sense, replace Duncan. You can't, but you have to find another big who's basically going to be the number two with Tony Parker.
And you know what? I think that's the beauty of having that dynamic coach/GM that you have in Popovich, because I think a big man would want to come to San Antonio just to play for Pop. Yeah, the also lack of income tax or state tax is also a big boost, but Popovich just comes off as such a player-friendly but yet stern coach that he'll keep everybody reined in. Dwight Howard wouldn't thrive there, but at the same time, I could see a younger player like a DeAndre Jordan or DeMarcus Cousins.
Somebody
even.
Like that. Yeah. Huh? Oh, yeah, DeMarcus Cousins, who would.
Hey, he ain't going nowhere. We to let him go. I'm sorry. I try to be a Kings fan as long as I can, but if they get rid of DeMarcus Cousins, I am through.
They're talking about making Boogie a international star, so they're not. I'm just saying, you know, if Boogie's I'm not going there.
But they could get they may not be able to get the top 3 or 4 free agents, but you can get a Al Jefferson or a Millsap or somebody on
Paul
that
Paul Millsap
level.
Would be perfect.
Yeah,
yes, he would.
To come play for them. All right, we got to. It's only fair. I don't want to, but we got to give some love to the back-to-back champions.
Got to give credit where credit's due. Got to.
LeBron was like, I will say, like you said, Rashawn, I think Tim Duncan wanted it the most. I think LeBron needed it the most. I mean, this dude, he put up triple-doubles in the series. He's getting crapped on. Everybody's like, oh, if he doesn't win, then you know, his legacy is now going to fall. I'm like, fall short. I'm like, dude, this dude is 28. He's doing everything. He's your leading scorer, your leading rebounder, your leading assister. And he got to guard Tony Parker?
Yep.
Like, come on. But he stepped the hell up. His jumper finally gave it to him, and he hit him.
Honestly, I think that LeBron James, when it's all said and done, people are going to realize LeBron James was the best thing to happen in the age of social media as far as sports. People will say that Michael Jordan's the best thing to happen to the NBA, blah, blah, blah. LeBron James came at a perfect time.
He did.
Because secretly, everybody respects his talent. Nobody doubts his talent. The dude, like you said, he almost averaged a triple-double for the finals. He got 30 points in 8 straight games. That's crazy. Like, let me say it again, how crazy that is that he did that. He was a leading assist man. He was a leading rebounder. He was their leader. He is sublime in every – he's like what they used to say about Mary Poppins. practically perfect in every way. That's LeBron. The problem with LeBron isn't LeBron. It's the fact that LeBron is in the social media age where everybody wants to be a comedian. And LeBron just happened to be silly enough to do that decision and give people fodder, where even though that ammo is dry, that gun, that chamber is empty, he'll do something else like have a high hairline and take off his headband. And he'll do something that will just give people fire. And people on Twitter, I guarantee you, 99% of the people who talk about LeBron love him secretly.
Yep.
They just don't want to say anything because they've already said bad stuff about him. But LeBron James is not even a first ballot Hall of Famer. LeBron James, when he retires, he's going to step off the podium from his retirement and go straight to the Basketball Hall of Fame. Straight, like boom, boom. By then, they'll have a teleporter like Star Trek, and he'll just say, I'm out. Step onto the teleporter, go straight to the Hall of Fame induction ceremony. He's that good. There hasn't been a player this good in a long time. So to say that I'm happy for him winning the championship is a severe understatement. But you know who I'm really happy for? Out of everybody on that team, who I'm really happy for, and then the player that I'm really sad for, conversely, the player that I'm really happy for that they won a championship was Chris Bosh.
Okay.
Chris Bosh takes more flack for the stupid things that he does than anyone. And I identify with Chris Bosh because I'm a goofball just like he's a goofball.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Bosh is one of them players who wants the best for everybody else. I'll pass out. I'll be the third banana. I'll be whatever you need in order for us to be the best we can be. And people get on him for that. Yeah, he doesn't go hard for rebounds all the time. And yeah, it may not seem like he's trying, but he wins.
Yeah.
And conversely, the player that I feel the worst for out of everybody, Tracy McGrady.
T-Mac. My boy, Tracy.
T-Mac. As soon as ESPN did a story about him, I was like, he ain't winning. But, you know, they had him, they brought him out of retirement to sit on the bench, never play, get that close to a championship, and you know he's sitting on the bench like, put me in, coach. I can do something.
Right.
Never got any burn. They lose by like 3 or 4 points, and you just see the Heat shaking Tracy's hands while he's still wearing his warm-up outfit. That was the saddest thing I've ever seen in my life, basketball-wise. That was the equivalent of on Sunset Park when Drano missed the game-winning jumper.
Oh man, it was bad, man. I mean, he came on. I was shocked. I'm like, they got T-Mac? Okay,
I was
happy. He'll play some, and didn't play diddly.
My boy.
He never missed the court.
Yeah, Chris Bosh, man, we've been on Twitter for like, a year or so? They go in on his ass. He can't make a face. If he opens his mouth, they like, look at this dinosaur-looking fool.
Exactly.
Just stick a dick in it. Like, what the heck? And everybody was like, please, whatever you do, when you get that champagne, do not open your mouth and drink the champagne like that. Just don't squirt it in your face, because everybody going to be making gay jokes about you in the next 10 minutes.
And guess what happened?
You know he did it.
Yep, because Chris is like, you know what? I can't please y'all. I can't. I got a beautiful wife and a beautiful family. I just won my second championship. I'm going to do me. But people are still going to make fun of him because he does stupid stuff.
Chris Bosh was in a no-win situation when he came to Miami, because when you had guys of that magnitude, of a LeBron James and a Dwayne Wade, he was always that other guy. It's like, oh, we got LeBron and D-Wade and that guy and Chris Bosh.
Yep.
He's always been the other guy of the big three. Like, it's like a big 2.5 almost.
Yeah,
like, that's how people look at it. And I feel bad for him, but it's bittersweet for me. I'm very happy he won. I am bitter because they went through my Bulls to get to the championship. But, you know, it's all good. It's all good. So, Chris Bosh, to me, will get traded, though, just because of salary cap purposes.
Yeah, and they set up that salary cap. It seems like they set up that salary cap just to knock them out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, them and all the big teams, all the Lakers, all these teams who want to just, who are cool with going over the luxury tax, they were like, oh, y'all just chill with it? All right, well, we're going to make it even more severe. So mm-hmm. the longer you own it, the more you got to pay.
Yep.
And owners are like, oh, yeah, oh, it's dollar for dollar that first year. And then by the third year, that shit is like $4. You're like, yeah, we can't afford that. I mean,
yep.
I ain't mad at Riley. I'm just like Popovich. Hey, he had the cap room. He was able to re-sign his star player and two other guys. And his whole challenge was, can I get enough minimum pay guys and role players to fill it out? Because you need them. You can't just, you know, that whole, like, well, you just throw anybody with them and they'll win. I'm like, that's not going to happen. We saw that what happened in Dallas. Every time they won, the role players have stepped up. You know, Shane Battier was, I don't even know why he was on the bench so damn long. He finally gets some run, and in game seven, this dude is hitting everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mario Chalmers had a couple good games in game two, and then he came alive in game seven again. Like, shit. I mean, you need role players to win. Jonathan and I preach that all the time. It's not just about the superstars. You got to have solid role players because
the role players win you the titles. The role players win you the titles. Like, the star players get you there, but the role players are the ones who are going to get you over the hump.
Yep.
Yeah, so, hey, LeBron, yeah, he is. Social media has made him a huge target. Magic and Bird brought the game back to life in the 80s. Jordan had the luxury of, in a sense, basically when he beat Magic, it was almost like a handoff, like, here, I'm passing the torch, go ahead, it's your league now. And he popped off right when sports endorsements were in.
Yep.
And he was the face of every damn thing. And, you know, of course, everybody loves Jordan. We forget about all his misses and his chokes
mm-hmm.
and the fact that he was an asshole and gambled all the damn time. We forgot all that. It's just Jordan didn't do nothing wrong. According
mm-hmm.
to Jordan stands out there. You know, we talked about it last week, a couple weeks ago. I'm tired of the comparison. It's like, where does he rank? Like, he got two. He's in his prime. Everybody else is done. He's not going to be Jordan. He can't. He's not an asshole like that. He has
And like I said, like I told my brother, the player that nobody's comparing him to that I think LeBron compares to out of any player who's played in the league is my favorite player, Oscar Robertson.
Yep.
That is who LeBron James players like. I mean, you got a guy who's basically averaging a triple-double. That's what Big O did. And he averaged that for, like, five-plus seasons. I mean, that is what LeBron James is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you really going to compare him to somebody, compare him to Oscar Robertson, who basically created the triple-double.
And if you're unable to, for some reason, compare him to Oscar like you should, then at that point in time, yep.
Magic
yep,
Johnson.
Yep. Nope.
Scottie Pippen.
Nope. Nope. Nope.
Who would you say?
Larry Bird.
I can see that.
I can see
I would
say
Larry.
If you swap the shooting ability for driving ability, yeah, I would see that.
Yep. And even then, I mean, he shot a good percentage from three.
Yeah.
Yeah, he shot he was a great he upped his field goal percentage tremendously.
So I could see Larry Legend perhaps being the counterpart. But I never saw Michael.
He's more Pippen to me because Pippen did everything. All Jordan had to do was score and
exactly.
guard maybe the second best guy. I was like, Pippen's the one setting up the offense. You know, if they were playing a team like the Spurs, who would be guarding Tony Parker? Scottie Pippen. Not Jordan.
I compared him more to Magic just because you had a guy this size who was a pass-first guy who could play basically all five positions.
Yeah, the 1-5 thing gets annoying to me because I'm like, yeah, it's 1-5 now.
Yeah, I'm about to say, in this era, he wouldn't be doing that, you know, in the 90s and the 80s. And that wouldn't happen.
No. But question. What do y'all think about Dennis Rodman saying that LeBron wouldn't have been nothing back in the 90s?
Dennis is just talking. He's just talking. I mean, LeBron James, his skill set, he's a freak of nature. in the 90s, there's no way LeBron James could not have been dominant based on his physique alone. He's 6'9", 260, runs end-to-end like as basically as fast as all point guards, as Chris Paul, Derrick Rose, as these guys. And, I mean, Dennis is just talking. I mean, I just there's no way I can't see LeBron succeeding in here. I mean, just the way he's built alone is there's no way he wouldn't succeed in the 90s. No way.
Yeah, I don't believe that either. I'm like, all right, you just – look, you want to back up your boy Jordan?
That's fine.
That's cool. But to be like he would just be a role player, I'm like, all right, now you're just going a little over the top.
Yeah.
No, he would adjust. I mean, it's hard to say, well, he wouldn't be able to play in that league. I'm like, well, he's good enough and smart enough where he can adjust to, you know, what if the game was more physical, then he probably had to adjust to that and be more physical. But right now mm-hmm. it's not. So you get him flopping and – when he gets hit, it's like, you know, he's not the physical presence where I'm going to just dole it back out
mm-hmm.
like that. He's, you know, he's not a troublemaker like that. He doesn't have Jordan's off-the-court issues.
Nope.
Yeah, you know, that's trash to me. He just needs to.
That's the biggest problem I have with people talking about LeBron and Chris. And to some extent, you know, the people who just make fun of a lot of the NBA players right now, they're not troublemakers. They're not doing anything bad. They're not having children out of wedlock. They're not doing anything but playing ball.
Yep.
And why do we have this animosity? To me, I'm a Laker fan. And that's a Laker fan where if my Supersonics ever came back, I'd no longer be a Laker fan. But, you know, you have to take the second best when the first one has gone away. But do you think that there's got to be a reason why people have so much animosity against this team? It can't be because they chose each other, because really Carmelo and Amari and whoever else they wanted to have up in New York, and Chris Paul and Dwight Howard are talking about, and everybody's talking about ganging up now and becoming a big three. Nobody was mad at Kevin Garnett, Ray Allen, and Paul Pierce when they did it.
No, but that's probably because they were not at their primes. They were at the tail end of everything.
Yeah. When they did it, I mean, with LeBron being the best player in the league, I think that was the thing that kind of rubbed people the wrong way a little bit. When Ray Allen, Paul Pierce, KG got together, they weren't the best in the game anymore. You have the best player in the league teaming up with when they signed together, Dwayne Wade was arguably a top 5 player in the league, and then you add Chris Bosh, who's a top 10 player in the league. Potentially, I think that is what rubbed people the wrong way. You have a lot of people out there who's like, I don't like when people buy championships. I don't like when people buy championships. I'm like, look, if that was a decision, that was a decision. Because I'm sorry, me, I was pulling for both of them to come to Chicago with Derrick Rose.
Exactly.
So I wanted a big three too. I wasn't complaining. I was just like, you know what? They wanted to go there together. They wanted to go there together. That's fine. I'm like, it's not back in the day where you got guys who were with their teams and were just like, you know what, I'm going to stay here my entire career. It's not like that anymore. Guys are getting traded now like it's nothing. And guys are now just players basically on the teams now. But I want to go here. Okay. We have to figure out a way to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's less, you know, you seem like they lucked out. Because, I mean, you look at the Lakers and the Sucks in the 80s. It's like, how the hell did you amass all that talent?
Drafted.
You're like, you're that good, and you get James Worthy, a top three pick. When the fuck, how did that happen? You know, same thing with the, you got Kevin McHale on your bench. And,
yeah.
I mean, that doesn't happen now. I mean, of course, we have like probably 12 more teams.
But also, you have to keep in mind that it's a little known fact. So gather around, children, and let me tell you about the past of the NBA draft when it was like 10 rounds. I mean, it used to be just balls deep.
Yeah. 12 rounds.
It used to be crazy. And I can see how you think that, okay, if I picked up Joe Barely Cares for the Warriors and all of a sudden I think he's going to be some sauce pellets, okay, I want to get him off my team no matter what. And there's going to be 10 rounds. I can find somebody else. So, yeah, I'm going to trade to the Celtics and they get lucky, you know. But that's how the dynasty got made, because there was a lack of freedom, lack of free agency, and there was a lack of desire to really move, because, I mean, it wasn't like the other teams were paying you more money. Back in those days, people were getting part-time jobs.
Yeah.
It wasn't like you were killing the game or something, so why leave? I like my town. People out here think I'm a hero. And there's a prostitute up the street who will give me a Lucy for free.
I don't get with, like, when, you know, when Barkley and all them came out, my thing was like, all right, dude, you homies with Jordan. If just by chance you happen to hit free agency and the Bulls are like, hey, we got cap room to sign you, do you want to come play for the Bulls? You're going to be like, nah, I don't. I want to beat Jordan. I don't want to play with Jordan. Nigga, word. I don't buy that. I don't believe that shit at all. You'd be like, oh, I can. Hey, like, you went to the Rockets with Elijah Warren and Scottie Pippen.
Basically.
You tell me you would not have gone and replaced Dennis Rodman on the Bulls. I mean,
and with all the jock sniffing Barkley was doing to Michael Jordan when they weren't on the same team. I mean, when the Suns played against the Bulls in the NBA Finals, I saw so much respect from Charles Barkley for Michael Jordan, and it just felt like Kanye and Jay-Z sort of thing. So for Barkley to talk now like he wouldn't have left, like he wouldn't have left his scrub-ass, bummish-ass 76ers squads, where it was him and Hersey Hawkins and Johnny Dawkins and Jeff, nigga, please. Negro, you out all of your minds. Because if I had to choose between playing with Michael Jordan or playing with Armin the Black Hole Gilliam, it wouldn't even be a second thought. You wouldn't see anything in the newspaper. There wouldn't be a decision on ESPN. It would just be me, middle finger, somebody gets thrown out the window, I'm in Chicago. Bye.
Exactly.
So what it is it's the same thing that all old people or older people do. It's a bit of revisionist history.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, there's no way I would have slept with girls when I was your age. That was just promiscuous and crazy. No, the teachers didn't have the opportunity. That's what it is. That's what it is. You were a virgin until you were 20 because you didn't have the opportunity. You didn't play with Michael Jordan because you didn't have the opportunity. You didn't suck Michael Jackson's dick when you saw him in concert because he didn't come your way, and that's why your sister got pregnant. But there's no way that you can say that you're a saint when we all know that everybody out there wants to play with the best, because the only way you were going to be the best was to play with the best, and it's always been that way. Forget what they say. I don't care. I'm sorry.
No, you make a point. I mean, we all know throughout this league that you cannot win with just one superstar. You have to have a second, at least a second superstar.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not mad at LeBron for leaving. I mean, he tried. Nobody wanted to come to Cleveland. I mean, we can't blame him.
Yep.
Nope.
Only one who wanted to come Mo Williams. I leave too.
Mo Williams. And Booby Gibson, Larry Hughes. He didn't have any talent around him. So, I mean, you couldn't blame him for leaving.
Yep. And, I mean, it's to me, the only place where they said to be the best, you got to beat the best, was Ric Flair in a fake entertainment sport like wrestling. It's the only place where they meant it. To be the best, you got to beat the best. And that was scripted. You know what? Karl Malone would have sold his left ass cheek to play with Michael Jordan. There's a reason why Clyde Drexler jumped up and went to Houston, because he wasn't going to beat Houston when he was with Portland.
Yep.
Would you rather have Kevin Duckworth or Hakeem Olajuwon? Let's lay it out on the table. White people back in the 50s and the 60s may have been racist as shit, but they damn sure would have sold everything to play with Bill Russell.
Yep.
So we got another guy on the call. Malcolm, you there?
Hey, what's up? I'm here.
All right. Yeah, we got Brother Malcolm from Culture Connection from the Black Hills family. How's it going?
Good, bro. Just listening in, just trying to catch up with what y'all been talking about.
Hey, well, I'll let you jump in. We basically been talking about, you know, the way the sports is going right now and everybody getting on LeBron with the whole decision and jumping on different teams and bandwagons. You know, what's your take on it?
It's interesting because I find that I find mostly it's just hypocrisy when it comes to LeBron and any athlete's decision to do what they need to do, what's best for their career. No one ever says to you when you jump ship from your job after a year and a half because you hate it or because your boss sucks that all of a sudden you have no loyalty. And I don't know where or when we put this sort of mentality. It's almost like some modern-day slavery. Like, boy, you're supposed to stay on this plantation as good as I've been to you. It's like, these are business decisions. These brothers and have every right to change and shift in their life as their personal circumstances dictate. And, I mean, I'll admit, I'm not necessarily a fan of LeBron, but that's just because I'm a Kobe fan and a Laker fan. So it has nothing to do with the fact that I don't think he's one of the greatest players to play the game. And I was very, you know, at the end of the day, I'm very happy that he and his franchise are able to build on his decision or whatnot. But I actually find all of the vitriol towards LeBron to be hypocritical. And particularly it seems to always be against Black athletes, you know, as if we don't have a right to make a decision to change the path of our career. Like we should be grateful for where we are and what we have. It's annoying, and I just think it's hypocritical.
And no, you know what? To jump in on that, Malcolm, and hey, what's going on, man? I love the show. Love it.
Thanks.
Love it.
Thanks.
Sorry, I had to get that off my chest. I love reading sports books. You know, Jeff Pearlman's one of my favorite authors right now. And to read books like Hate Me, Love Me, The Making of an Anti-Hero, and that story about Barry Burns, you really start to see interesting things, such as he was talking about where when Bobby Bonilla left the Pirates and went to the Mets. In the first season he came back, they were booing him, and the announcer played All About the Money and all that kind of stuff. But when Jeff Blauzer left to go to the Braves and he came back, he was cheered, you know. And when Barry Bonds left and came back, he got booed out of his mind. Like, they just have this, and it was manifested when Dan Gilbert said it, but they just, not just the owners, the city, the state, has this sense of possessiveness about Black athletes.
Yeah.
And it just, it becomes almost a fear, like, we're not going to get somebody else of this stock. We're not going to get another stud like this. So how dare you think of going above your station and leaving? You're absolutely right. I can be at a job for a year or two and be looking for the next step.
You would.
People come in
like
talking about their look. People come in saying they're looking for that next step. So for an NBA player to say, okay, I'm a free agent, I can do whatever I want, and people to say you're ungrateful, you're this and you're that, that's just childish. And that's what I was saying earlier about the social media aspect of it, is that now people are able to say these things with anonymity.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And so now the most closeted fan who may have had these thoughts or whatever, but would have kept it to themselves, now has this avenue and this platform to speak. And even if they say something outlandishly racist, like LeBron James is this or that, or a black hockey player is this or that, what happens is they say it on a social network like Facebook or Twitter, and they'll get one retweet, they'll get two likes, and that'll just make them think that there's other people who feel the same way as them, and it grows. That's why I'm saying social media is a snowball of whatever aspect. If you're talking good and people like it, it'll snowball into something great. But if you're talking bad about somebody and it snowballs, it can go out of control quickly.
The other thing I find that's also interesting about this conversation about just athletes and celebrity and their money. First of all, athletics is not a public entity. It's not a 501c3. So at the end of the day, it's none of our business how much they make and how, you know. So that whole discussion and how people get all upset about, oh, look how much money he's making, all the complaining, blah, blah, blah. Listen, we are the public that contribute to that entertainment and its value. If you don't appreciate what's going on, you have every right to stop watching, to stop buying merchandise, to stop buying exactly. The products that come on those sports broadcasts. But we feed into it. And again, this idea, it's like we want our cake and we want to eat our cake and have it too. And I feel what frustrates me is that we live in a world, particularly as just Americans, where we want to be entertained, but then we want to cast judgment on these young brothers. And that's what a lot of people forget. These dudes are like barely coming out of adolescence, being teenagers, and are being thrust into a spotlight of international fame and ungodly money. And we become so critical of them and their choices that they make, but I always ask people, I'm like, well, what were you doing when you were 21? Because I know when I was 21, I was making dumb decisions. I was doing things that I absolutely should not have been doing. I am grateful I don't have no kids because of it, or no diseases, or, in, you know what I mean, and that I'm not bankrupt, because I was making completely irrational, and I didn't have a moral compass at a certain point. So I can imagine that Malcolm with a $20 million contract to do what I do every day. And that I love doing. And so what I wish people would do is, one, realize that these are young men who are trying, who are entertaining us, right? So they're already providing a service. But I wish there was a way that, I don't want to say mentor, but I just wish people would give them a little bit more credit for where they are in their life. And I don't expect them to be role models for my future children or my god kids, or like, I don't expect that. I don't have an expectation that because you're entertaining me and because you make a lot of money that somehow that comes with some kind of moral obligation to the public. It baffles me that people think that. You're an entertainer, you entertain me. I love it when you talk smack, but then I want you to be humble when it comes to you deciding where you're going to go on your next team. It's like you can't have both. Either you want the entertainment factor of people talking smack, claiming that they're going to have 15 championships over the next 15 years and they're going to dominate the NBA, or you're going to have the new David Stern NBA where it's like everybody wears suits. Nobody has any. No one is able to really express themselves because we're so scared that this image of hip hop is going to cause people to be rioted. I guess it's a microcosm of just America's general problems of being hypocritical and all that we do. But it becomes annoying and frustrating, particularly when you watch sports analysts and you listen to people and you look at online and the anonymity of being able to give your opinion. You know, people have a short memory and they forget. What this really is. At the end of the day, it's entertainment.
It is, and they need to just look. It's rough. I will say, Jonathan and I didn't grow up in the poorest of neighborhoods. We grew up all right, but if like at 22, yeah, I'm getting $10 million a year, and everybody knows I'm making $10 million a year, and you know, who am I supposed to trust? How do I know this person coming up to me and is liking me for me, Chris Layman the person, not Chris Layman the guy with $10 million? Whose face is on every billboard. I mean, nah, these dudes get caught up. You know, you hear about these chicks who be, you know, sleeping with them and putting their business out there. And I mean, shit. I mean, I would love to have the money. I'll admit that. But, you know, the fame that come with it, I am cool on that.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a blessing and a curse, honestly. I mean, please, I'm not going to lie. I'll take that few million for a minute and then I won't get enough.
I hope you guys are enjoying the show so far. We're going to take a quick musical interlude, and we'll be back with more Brothers Layman Sports Happy Hour.
Miami life at any price, keep my pockets right. After police, Miami life ain't nothing nice. Miami life at any price, keep my pockets right. After police, Miami life ain't nothing nice. I'm launching rockets and scuds at Crockett and Tubbs. Anti, full of more rum than a Mai Tai. And despite high school and I be high, refusing to listen to what the PTA say. F a 4.0 GPA, I got a 5.0 GTA. Hitting the chop shop with an ETA at 3 o'clock. So shake the spot like Luke and them girls with the Daisy Dukes. Cause life's a beach and I'll forever be wearing my bathing suit. Met this Colombian mommy, said a daddy trappy cabbie with government permission. No DEA intervention, filthy rich and did lines for recreation. Snorting coca, but Pinocchio's broke. Cause I don't know the next OG the locust. You still can't teach me or reach me with history. When the story is his, and who gets to be the future Pablo Escobar, don't need a diploma. Minimum wage, the rest, I'm living well like Jones. Miami life at any price, keep my pockets right. After police, Miami life ain't nothing nice. Miami life at any price, keep my pockets right. After police, Miami life ain't nothing nice. Walk these streets with more heat than Alonzo Mourning. Now how many toasters can these smokers keep on? My school days was like Porky's. In class doing the butt or in the hallway ditching. Teachers pet snitching, but ain't no Miami bass like the triple beam, so fool please, I move MCs like OGs. I want more cheese than crap ravioli. Got love like Chachi and Joni, microphone Michael Corleone. Only the homies really know me, but everybody wanna dip in my mix, so flip. What part of the game is this? Keeping COINTELPRO, sticking it to brothers like Velcro. Fighting felony convictions, the closer shaved in the Relco. Well, those they can lose it, I'm still efficient. Why? Cause I'm on the roll like toilet tissue. Ride up. Anything less would be uncivilized. At any price, price. Miami life, life. Yeah. Miami life at any price, keep my pockets right. After police, Miami life ain't nothing nice. Miami life at any price, keep my pockets right. After police, Miami life ain't nothing nice. Miami life at any price, keep my pockets right. After police, Miami life ain't nothing nice. Miami life at any price, keep my pockets right. After police, Miami life ain't nothing nice.
Except no substitute. And I'ma make it known to specialists like Stallone and Sharon Stone, watching your spot get blown. You don't even understand. I ain't scared of you motherfuckers.
Senator Bob Doles
and C. Dolores Tucker. What the world needs is less free cheese, more white collar J.O.B.s. These ghetto MPs stretching fools on the block for crack rock. But powder power brokers is getting over like unprotected sex with Oprah. Float like a tournament of roses parade. Sting like a bee, but of course. Put my foot so deep in your ass, the water in my knee will quench your thirst. I got juice freshly squeezed, words 100% Bombay. Made for more concentration than Minute Maid. Renegade, Rob, Rob, Ruckus, nonfiction. Me and my kin slipping mickeys and putting hickeys on your chest. I never been seen like the Loch Ness Monster. And now a word from my sponsor.
Yeah. Now word from my sponsor.
Miami life at any price, keep my pockets right. After police, Miami life ain't nothing nice. Miami life at any price, keep my pockets right. After police, Miami life ain't nothing nice. Miami life at any price, keep my pockets right. After police, Miami life ain't nothing nice. Miami life at any price, keep my pockets right. After police, Miami life ain't nothing nice. Miami life ain't nothing nice. Miami life. The police. Miami life.
I also am curious to know, you know, interested in you guys' thoughts about, like, the vitriol. To me, over the past, I'm going to say 10 years, the vitriol that has come into sports seems like it's taken a different turn from, like, the 80s and 90s. Like, I feel... Like when LeBron left Cleveland, people were burning his jersey, and just the hate I hear when people talk about Kobe, I don't understand the hate that's coming at these players. I can understand I don't like you, you're not my team, but like hate and dislike are two different things, and hate is such a strong emotion. I mean, I'm talking about people, you know, and it's not even just those two. I remember when Steve Blake made a mistake in the playoffs last year. He had this whole thing where people were threatening his wife. I mean, it's just, I think that it's gone too far. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost like, it's like they got $50 invested in this, or they got money on this so tough that their team's loss or this person's behavior on the team, they're so invested in it that it could affect their own personal life. And I'm curious to know what you guys think about that. If it's gone too far, that's also just part of the entertainment of sports now.
I think it has gone too far, but I think a part of it is the social media. If you look at what's going on here, I mean, with the Twitter and the Facebook, the MySpace, people have so much of an outlet now to be able to express their feelings now. It's not so much you yelling in front of the TV anymore, cursing out the TV. Oh, shoot, I can just go on Twitter and just say how I feel. I mean, it's just now everybody has an outlet now to just express how they feel. And I can say it to millions of people, and I guarantee 50% of them will agree with me. I mean, it's just people get so caught up with sports. And I agree with you, Malcolm. I don't understand why people feel like they've invested millions of dollars into this team, and if they don't live up to expectations, just like, I hate you. I don't know what's going on. I mean, I don't understand it. As a fan, I'm just like, I'm a fan. I ride and die for my team, but if we lose, I'm upset, but I don't hate anybody. You know, I'm not the biggest Kobe fan. As you guys know, I'm not the biggest Laker fan. I'm not a big Kobe fan, but I respect Kobe bar none for his game and the way he plays. I'll boo Kobe if he's playing the Bulls, but besides that, Kobe's Kobe. He's a great player. I respect him. He's a definite Hall of Famer, first ballot, and I don't get it. So, I mean, a part of this is, I think it's a part, white America still plays a huge role. I think the NBA part, they are, in a sense, to me, I think they're embracing the hip-hop community a little bit. They're trying to shy away from it with the whole, you got to wear collared shirts and all that, but to me, for the most part, you got guys with the tattoos, and guys, you know, show their expressions. I mean, you know, with the way the NBA is, it's exciting. Guys love it and they enjoy it. The NFL is a different story. I mean, you still got a Rooney rule where you have to interview a minority candidate. Like, it's no question you have to. Why should you have to? It shouldn't even, you know, the fact that they have to force all these teams to interview a black or Hispanic or Asian candidate just shows me the NFL is miles behind where the NBA is as far as, you know, getting up to speed. It's sad. I mean, the fact that, you know, we had Lovie Smith get fired and not one place hired Lovie Smith says a lot to me. You got a coach who leads the Chicago Bears to the Super Bowl, gets fired after a double-digit win season, and can't get a job. That just opened my eyes to what's really going on. I mean,
well, I mean, to speak on that, that's the same exact thing that happened with a coach in the NBA, Avery Johnson.
Yeah.
He won Coach of the Year the year before he lost his job, I want to say.
Yeah.
Like, there's such a small threshold. And I try and preach this to my sons. I don't know how much, but they're hearing right now because they're 11 and 5, you know. But there's such a small threshold given for black men, black America as a whole, where Mike Brown gets hired by the Lakers and five games in gets fired. You know, whereas with the Kings, you can have a coach who's doing horrible for a whole season, Paul Westfall, and I don't know if it's based on his name or what. He denigrates his players. He doesn't take responsibility, and they lose. And he sticks around for like 3 or 4 seasons because he has a whole new program to work on. So I've never quite been able to understand why things are more challenging for us, but they are. They are, and they always will be. And as far as the hatred of players or teams or franchise or whatever it may be, that's just the world we're in now. And I hate saying that because it makes it sound like I'm making an excuse, but it is. Where people are able to rant and rail for their teams, and now it's progressed to where people are able to rant and rail for their player, and on top of that, in other forms of entertainment, they're able to rant and rail for their video game systems or go up against a video game or argue to the point where a video game manufacturer changes their whole format for an upcoming system.
Mm-hmm.
Fans and people feel like they have too much, not responsibility, but too much power.
Yeah.
And I just want to burst their bubbles a little bit by reminding them you pay $20 for a ticket. Maybe.
But I mean, it's a good thing, right? Because you have the investment, which I think is critical to sports. Is that you have an investment of a mass of people, but at the same time, I think everybody's right. Social media has overly empowered people to think that your investment means you get a seat at the table. No,
exactly.
You are just part of the overall milieu of the sports or the organization, but you don't call the shots. That's why there's a coach. That's why there's an owner. That's why there's trainers. I mean, and of course we love giving our opinion and our two cents about sports. That is to me, if that didn't exist in sports, it wouldn't be fun.
Mm-hmm.
But to get to a point where your input, and I don't know, I mean, maybe it's just because of the platform of social media where, you know, you can sound off and there's no way to really take it back once it's out there in the ether, once it's out there on online. You can delete it, but it will have already had the impact,
mm-hmm.
you know, vis-a-vis Paula Deen, you know, so it's like, there's no apologizing once you do certain things, it's already happened. So I don't know. It's a little bit of a conundrum because I think if you don't have all of that hype and you don't have the back and forth with fans and their commentary, it takes away some of the fun. But I guess for me, I think it can be dangerous. At the same time, I
hear what you're saying, but back in the days when black players were just getting integrated into sports and white America was calling them niggers and saying, nigger, get off that base. Your black ass belongs in the black dirt where you belong and stuff like that. Back then, I'm sure they thought they were doing the same thing. We're fans. We're allowed to have input on this. So I feel that this nigger doesn't belong here. Things of that nature. It's not right. There should be a level of decorum that everybody should know. And like somebody told me, fan and fanatic is just a shortening for fanatic.
Yep.
And we fear fanatics in every other place. A religious fanatic,
mm-hmm.
Westboro or fanatical, I fear them. I fear people in sports because somebody's going to get it into their head that you owe me. I paid, and I've seen that. We've all seen that. I paid $40 for this ticket to bring me and my kid to this game, and you didn't show up and play Tim Duncan. Your coach said that you were sick. You owe me.
Right.
That's a problem. What we need to keep in mind is the fact that we might have paid $20 to get into this game, but the owner paid $22.35 million for that player. He's the one that really has the last say in this, not us. And us talking to the players is just going to provide a bigger buffer for the players who aren't going to want to interact with us.
Yep.
And that's the problem with social media. You see now the players are like, you know what? These folks is bugging. These folks out here is tripping, and I ain't got nothing to do with them right now, so I'm signing off. LeBron shut down for the entire playoffs. He was like, I'm not going on Twitter. Chris shut down. They're not trying to mess with fans right now because the fans don't know how to be real fans.
Right.
But then no, they don't.
Go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, in this here, you know, in the happy hour, that's how we preach. Jonathan and I, we're both fans. We are fans of the game. Like, look, I took the loss hard.
Mm-hmm.
That day I'm cussing, my son, I'm mad, like, leave me alone. I don't feel like talking to nobody. I'm upset. You know, but after a few days, I'm like, it's a game.
Exactly.
That's why you saw Pop at the end, and he's like, oh, they hurt? Yeah, they hurt. But, hey, I'm happy. Look what we got. We made it far. You know, we didn't get our end goal, but these guys played their butt off. I love them. I'm proud of what they've done. And pass off to the winning team. And that's it. You know, we finally had a series where you show these dudes. At the end of the game, Pop is hugging LeBron James, Dwayne Wade. It's all respect. And you got fans like, well, I don't like them hugging. I'm like, people ain't trying to carry that kind of hate around.
Exactly.
That don't mean they're not mad that they lost. It's just like, hey, congrats, man. You won. Cool. I'm not like I'm happy for you that you beat our ass. They just like, hey, man, good for you. You know,
mm-hmm.
And that's it. And we
now, what
we
do you,
move
what
on.
Do you,
but this fan crap is... They did it with. I remember they did it with Mike Brown when they went off on his son, like, yeah, your daddy's a stupid ass. He's and I'm like, dude, why are you going at his son?
Exactly.
Same thing with Avery Johnson. I'm like, why are you going at these dudes' families? If you don't like them, don't like them. Go get personal. Like, well, I'm attacking their kids. Like, their kid has nothing to do with it.
And at the end of the day, what are you not liking? You know what I'm saying? for me, I can disagree with a coaching style, a player's skills, but me not liking someone, to me, that usually gets more personal than it is skill-based. That's why I said the hate towards LeBron and Kobe is absolutely ridiculous and unwarranted, because these are two men who they play basketball with the tenacity that most people don't even raise their kids with.
Yep.
You know what I mean? They have committed their lives to being the best at this sport that they can be. And at the end of the day, the least you can do is say, absolutely, I would go up and congratulate LeBron and the Heat, because we all worked very hard to get here, and we did our job. We played this game to our fullest ability. We played hard, and at the end of the day, there is always going to be one winner.
Yep.
So what would we be teaching kids? What are we teaching a world where you're like, don't go up to them afterwards? First of all, it's competitive sports, which means that one of us is going to lose. So what are you teaching kids if you're telling them, you know, don't go up to your opponent afterwards, you know, be a sore loser? And then my thing is, when LeBron did that, when LeBron left the court, was sour when they lost, what was that, 2 years ago?
Yeah, with Orlando.
They lost to Orlando. Everyone went up in arms about that. Oh, you should have been a team player. I mean, you should have been, you know what I mean? What was your sportsmanlike conduct? And I'm like, you know, he's damned if he do and he's damned if he doesn't. You know, because when he walked off the court, not trying to show no love, everyone was pissed off. And, you know, he stays on the court and it receives the congratulatory. I mean, there's nothing really you can do at the end of the day, because everyone's going to have an opinion. Everyone's going to think that you should behave the way they want you to behave. But at the end of the day, I think cordiality and sportsmanlike conduct is congratulating the victor. Because
yeah.
I would want to be congratulated, because at the end of the day, it is a celebration of both teams. Like, that was one of the best series finals ever. It was entertaining. They worked their butts off, and there was adjustments made in every game. The coaching was phenomenal. It was just an excitement. There was an energy around watching the series. And to me, that's what – and I didn't even have to pay for it. I got to watch it on a TV. And for me, as a fan, I don't know what more people could ask for. And neither one of those were my teams, neither.
Right, right. All right, we're going to move on real quick, get to some other topics. It seems like it's confirmed today that the Clippers do get Doc Rivers. Looks like they are going to basically trade a first-round pick. And in a sense that the Clippers and Celtics are basically swapping contracts, Clippers are going to give him a 3-year, $21 million deal. What do y'all think? What do you think of the move?
He better be worth it.
Yeah.
Let's be completely honest. Doc Rivers wasn't that great of a coach before he got the big three.
No, he wasn't.
So he better be worth it. I mean, you guys are putting a lot of stock into somebody who suddenly got good when three Hall of Famers showed up on his team and a great point guard. Sure, he's a player's coach, but can Brian Shaw get some love somewhere? Can we stop all chasing after the same damn five coaches? I mean, really, nobody wanted Greg Popovich until he got hired by the Spurs. You don't know what Brian Shaw can do. You don't know. But we're chasing after Doc Rivers like he's fool's gold.
I mean, I think that was Chris Paul say. I think Chris Paul made that move happen. I mean, because you see the Clippers initially, when talks were made, they pulled out and – it was read that Chris Paul, I guess, wanted Doc Rivers as a head coach. So I think Chris Paul made that happen. Now that he's here, I don't know if the Clippers feel Chris Paul is obligated to sign. He is still technically a free agent. So I don't know. But from what I know, Chris Paul is the one who initiated that and who wanted him there. So it looks like Chris Paul may be staying.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, I'm a Lakers fan until my Sonics come back, and then they'll be my second phase. And I like a good rivalry as much as the next person. So I want the Clippers to continue to be good, but I don't know. like, a coach can only do so much for you. A coach isn't going to change your team's attitude immediately. A coach is going to come in. Usually what a coach does is comes in, assesses the situation, and then overhauls the team to what he wants it to be. He's going to get some new assistant coaches. He's going to get some new trainers. He's going to get new whatever in order to make what he needs to get done, done. Because while he's concerned about his players being happy, a coach paramount is concerned about his success because it's his job to be successful.
Right.
So Chris Paul, unless you've played for Doc Rivers and you know that Doc Rivers can do this for you, you don't know he's going to come in with a whole new playbook. I mean, the Lakers, like, to go back to an earlier thing, the Lakers, when they fired Mike Brown because he wasn't doing the triangle, they were happy for a second. Then Mike D'Antoni came in with this weird playbook that didn't utilize their big men at all. Doc Rivers can come in and set up a playbook that completely negates Blake Griffin. He can come in and set up a playbook that knocks Chauncey Billups out the box. And then what? It's like the frogs on a log. There were three frogs on a log who said, "We wish we had a king." So Zeus, hearing them and being amused by their wishes, dropped a lily pad into the water, and the frogs ran away. After a few minutes, they looked at the lily pad. They realized it was just a lily pad, and they hopped on top, and they said, "Zeus, quit playing. We want a king up in this piece." So he dropped a smaller rock, and it had a big splash, and the frogs ran away. And they were, after a few seconds, they realized it was a frog. It was a rock, and they were like, "Zeus, now you're really joking with us." Zeus got tired of their whining, and Zeus sent down a stork, which immediately started eating the frogs. That was their king. Be careful what you ask for, because you might not like the results that it brings you. And what the Clippers had last season with Vinny Del Negro was success. The most successful season they've ever had.
Yes, yes.
They needed to build upon that.
I don't understand this. I don't understand the not sticking with a coach and letting him work through, particularly as successful as the Clippers were, not working through the kinks. Now, I haven't read anything or heard anything that said that, you know, in a locker room people didn't get along with Vinny, but to me that was a winning combination. And no, they didn't get there this year, but, you know, everybody who's got these new teams, you're building. The fact that you got that far as the L.A. Clippers was a miracle. So this idea of jumping ship so quickly, sometimes it's very clear when it just doesn't work. I think it was clear with Mike Brown that it wasn't working with the Lakers. Now, I thought that Vinny would have worked with the team. I thought he was, you know, he had a young team. I think he's a good coach. I personally think that them jumping ship is going to be problematic. And this it's interesting to me, too, the how much weight, you know, the star player, how much their vote really carries in the back office. It's crazy because you're like, wow, are you part owner?
Exactly.
And you get to have so much say. And, you know, I guess long gone are the days that owners who knew what they were doing and they didn't need to hear from a player, you know, but it sounds to me like more and more players like a Kobe, like a Chris Paul, they have so much say in what happens in the back office. And I can't imagine my boss. I don't care if I'm the star employee at the company. At the end of the day, it's the boss makes all the decisions, and I don't necessarily get to have input on who is the next star who enters the team or who's my next boss.
Exactly.
Right. I was going to say, I agree with you, Mr. Shirley, on some point. I think he's the second best coach in the league right now behind Greg Popovich. He was bad in Orlando. He was coaching that team that lost 21 straight. And he had a Boston team that was okay, but it seemed like he's gotten them to fight, and I think that's what has endeared a lot of people to him. Is, you know, now that we have this, now we can see, you know, what the coaches are talking about on the sidelines. And he, even when his teams are banged up and doesn't look like they're going to compete as much, he gets them to fight. So I think for the Clippers, for them, it's a good move. You know, there's so many good coaches out there this year that, you know, now if they were going to get rid of Del Negro, this was the year to do it. You know, at this point, Chris Paul can't go back about that. Well, you know, they tried to blame me for getting Vinny Del Negro going. I'm like, well, dude, you basically just picked your coach.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that, you know, like they blaming me and I don't have much pull. I mean, Donald Sterling said it. He was like, it's a players' league. Players get to make a lot of the decisions now. And hopefully,
but I don't believe Donald Sterling more than I can throw him. Like, Donald Sterling is so quick to cut a player for nothing and talk bad about players and boo Baron Davis on the sidelines. Now he's going to listen to a player? For
right.
real?
That player trying to get him a ring.
Now,
that's why he listening.
When he had Danny Manning and he was shitting on that whole team, now he's going to listen to a player? I don't know. I'm going to say that it's still strange to me that Stan Van Gundy and Jeff Van Gundy don't have a job and folks are salivating over Doc.
Right. I'm surprised, Sheldon. I'm really surprised when we end up doing this, because, you know, we're going to end up doing this Laker podcast
mm-hmm.
soon. I'm going to get into this, you know, Brian Shaw, the hot commodity. You know, Paul George was even gave him credit. Like, Brian Shaw helped me become the player I am. And I don't know why he doesn't have a job. I'm shocked New Jersey did not hire him. Oh, sorry, I'm sorry. Brooklyn didn't hire him over Jason Kidd. We went through that.
Oh, you know, that's like a slap in the face. Jason Kidd just coming out of the league and he getting coaching jobs. Brothers out
exactly.
here struggling. I don't know. That's like to me such a slap in the face. Like, come on, dude. I know you're a great player, and you're gonna probably be a Hall of Famer. But wow, you haven't been coaching. You know, you still a player. I personally.
When the first thing you do when you get hired is you hire your old coach to be your assistant. You don't need to be a coach.
Exactly.
If my wife has a child, our first child, and the first thing I do is ask my dad to be at my house, that means that I'm not trained in how to be a father. And that is true. That's true. Every man, every woman who has their first child, somebody comes over, mother-in-law, father-in-law, something, just to show the ropes. Coaching an NBA team, you can't just retire and the next day say, I can do this. It takes, I'm going to go back to him, because Brian Shaw was an assistant with one of the greatest coaches in NBA history. And then he was an assistant with one of the best teams that played, I think, in this season. I might be tripping when I say that. But he's seen a lot. He played, he's coached, he's been with the players, and you're going to push him aside for Jason Kidd? Does anybody remember when Magic Johnson did this?
yes, I do.
It's going to be the same thing. And I'm just hoping that Jason Kidd does well, because he's a Cali boy. You know, I want somebody from Oakland to actually do well as a coach. But it's not going to be him. It's not him.
I think he'll be all right. I just don't. I agree. I think he should have at least taken a
year off
or done
how much leeway
coach,
do you think
at least taken a break.
How much leeway do you think they're willing to give him?
See, I don't know with Brooklyn because I was shocked because I'm like, a year ago, y'all were trying to, like, win it all. You got an owner who's saying he's willing to spend to win. There's too mm-hmm. many other good coaches out there. George Karl, Lionel Hollins, yeah, Brian Shaw, Nate McMillan. You could have got a quality coach.
I didn't even think about Nate. Nate the Great is still floating out there. Like, why don't – he sounds like Will Smith in The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Why don't he want me, man? Why don't they want me? It's like there's all of these coaches out here, and you're clamoring for Jason Kidd. Like, why? I'm not even trying to pour salt. I'm not hating. I'm not doing anything. But – when I play NBA 2K13, and I'm playing association mode, and I look at all of the coaches' stats and everything that I'm hiring or all the coaches' profiles, I'm not going to the bottom and then work my way back up. And the bottom is always – the bottom, I don't care what you say, the bottom is always going to be the one with absolutely no experience. No rec league, no junior high school, no high school. Penny Hardaway has more coaching experience than Jason Kidd. Hire him.
Yeah.
If you're just trying to make a splash, hire him. Or do what was the right thing and hire Brian Shaw. Because if you hire Jason Kidd and he flames out the same way that Magic Johnson did when he realized that as a point guard, he wasn't able to really mesh with his players. As a coach, he was unable to really convey to the players what he was trying to tell them. And he said he got upset because they weren't as good as he was.
Yeah. I think
you get to that point. Jason Kidd is Magic Johnson, the new age. Can't shoot jumpers, tall, point guard. He's going to get in there, and he's either going to do great or he's going to sink. And if he sinks, then what? You got Lawrence Frank right there as your coach all over again.
Yeah.
Brian Shaw was there.
Was, man, he was. And we got one more topic before we head out of the happy hour. We got to talk about this Aaron Hernandez drama.
Ho-ho. I just love how it's unfolding. They've been trying to be real careful, but ideally it was like, oh, this fool's going to jail.
He's a buck, huh?
He's
going to jail.
I mean, a brother is found dead, what, less than a mile from your spot? Oh,
that's why I didn't understand when they came out and said he's not a suspect. I'm like, how is he not a suspect? All the evidence is pointing at him.
Guess he's not black enough.
And you know the person that's dead, like, intimately?
The
like,
person who died is his girlfriend's sister's boyfriend.
Yeah, that's awkward.
He died a mile from his home. His evidence is destroyed. His cell phone is destroyed. He destroyed his security system at home. And I haven't heard the name of anybody else who's affiliated with it. So, I mean, for me, all arrows are pointing at him.
Wait a minute, and didn't they go to the house and, like, they found that he had cleaned up, like, blood or something? Or
yeah, like the maid had, it was just, like, recently, it was just recently cleaned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they've already gone through his house and searched twice, so it's just a matter of time. Just a matter of time.
And it's like, to me, why do you wait till you get famous before you do dumb stuff? Why wait until you're absolutely butt-naked rich to start doing stupid stuff? And that's what, I mean, really, one of your yes men should have been like, you know what, Aaron, you know what, I got this. I see you're mad. You're about to throw it all away. Just hire me a lawyer. I got this. I'm going to shoot this dude. I'm going to dump him in the river. We good. You go home. You play Madden. I'm going to shoot him in the foot right now. Pop, pop. See, I'm real. I got you. Go home. But no, they get rich and they start thinking they're above the law or something. Yep. I don't really know. But Jason Williams and Aaron Hernandez and Harvin Marison and all of these dummies, Ray Caruth, wait till they get rich before they throw it all away to do some dumb stuff.
Well,
I'm just glad he's not black.
Well, you know what? First of all, I don't think it has anything to do with the money, because either you're ignorant and dumb with money or without it. So just because you get money, in fact, it probably makes it worse. So I think this is a decision that would have been made if he wasn't a football player. What is unfortunate is that a lot of these stories with athletes, they get so much juice behind them from the media, obviously because, you know, the world of sports is like, oh, these people can't do anything wrong. But the truth of the matter is they're human beings. You know what I'm saying? They're going to cheat on their wives. They can kill people. They can beat up their kids. They can do all these things. And it goes back to what I was saying earlier. We act as if people who play sports and who do anything in an organization are like they're infallible. Are you kidding me? They're human beings. So they got messed up, crooked lives, just like the rest of us. They got some abuse issues in their family. They got some abandonment issues, just like anybody else. And so this stuff, it'll come out. If you got anger management issues and you play and you're an athlete and you're a celebrity, it's still going to come out. You're a celebrity and your money ain't going to hide it if you ain't trying to get it taken care of. And my thing is, like, stop looking at these people like they can't make mistakes and that they're not. You know what I mean? Because for me, that means that people aren't looking at them and trying to help them. Because, I mean, it's all going to come out. Like, either he's had some issues or with an accident. I don't know what it is, but, you know.
Well, He had issues back in college.
Exactly.
We had a situation where he had a gun incident. And then somebody, I think, just filed
just refiled a civil suit against him for another gun incident that I think he accidentally, or I don't know if it's accidental or not, but he shot somebody up, like in the shoulder or something. So this ain't the first gun issue he's had. So that's why I'm like, for me, this is it for him.
Yeah, he's
gone. Yeah.
But he will not be getting, well, you know, there goes his fantasy value.
Yep. I was about to say,
he is off the fantasy list.
Can I say one thing and then, you know, I'm through. I was at a barbecue on Father's Day. And while I was there, this two guys, one was a Patriots fan, one was I don't really know who, were talking about football. And they were talking about the fact that the Patriots had signed Tim Tebow. And one of the guys who I later found out was a racist said, and the first reason why I started thinking it was that he said, well, at least they got Tim Tebow, not somebody like Jamarcus Russell. I don't understand why everybody's giving Tim Tebow such a bad name when Jamarcus Russell got a free pass. I just saw a picture of Jamarcus Russell, and Jamarcus Russell is skinny. Like
he lost a lot of weight.
Yeah, like he's actually working to improve himself so then he can get back out onto the field. Tim Tebow is resolute in the fact that he doesn't want to do anything to be anything but what he is. Why aren't more people getting on Tim Tebow for his lack of desire to be anything other than a scrub?
As a Bronco fan who had him for that season where he was just performing miracles, the thing is with Tim Tebow, you don't want to badmouth him just because he is just so genuinely a nice guy. He has no blemishes on him. He is the true role model of what you want your kids to idolize. That is a guy you want your kids to look up to, but. Yeah, I agree with you. As a Bronco fan, it was like, okay, we got Peyton Manning coming. Oh, peace out, Tim Tebow. Because he's a great guy, but like everybody says, he is not a very good player. I mean, let me not say that. He's not a good quarterback.
Right.
But
he's
a good athlete. You know, he's a good football player. So, I mean, you can use him. It's just that whole the Christian value he brings. The fact that he epitomizes the role model you want your kids to idolize in sports without the skills.
Johnson hit the nail on the head. That is what it is. And it's really, look, I'm a Christian, so I can say this. I know that people are clouded by that, you know, and what happens is people are so overwhelmed about his showing of his faith, you see examples of athletes showing their faith all the time, but because he took it to the knee after every play, after every touchdown, you know, it's like, oh, everybody makes a big deal out of it. But at the end of the day, people are clouding, like, oh, he's such a good man of God and he's doing this. I can't be critical of him, but that's where it becomes problematic because you can be a really good person in this life, but if I can be a really nice and kind person at my job, but if I'm not doing my job, responsibilities and performing the functions of that job, people still have a right to be critical of me. And I think that's what it is, honestly. That's why he's getting all this love. And that's also why he gets a lot of the criticism from a lot of people because they feel like he is getting a pass because of that. Whereas if it was someone else, they would not be getting that pass.
And I think a guy like Jamarcus Russell, you have to look at him, and if he does happen to make a comeback, it has to be looked at as a success story. I mean, you look at this, the guy who was the number one pick overall. It's not like he didn't have skills coming in. He was the number one pick. So, I mean, he had some talent. He veered off, went the wrong path, got all that money, you know, ballooned up to over 300 pounds and whatnot, didn't show the passion or whatever. But the fact that he's now looks like he's grown a little bit, he's matured, he's trying to work his way back into the system. I hope somebody gives him another shot. I really honestly do. I mean, you see guys who screw up all the time, they get second chances. We are a nation of second chances. And nobody thought Tim Tebow would get another shot. Patriots gave him a chance. So I'm like, you got Vince Young out there. You got Jamarcus Russell out there. Give those guys a shot. They should be celebrated, too. You know, they made their mistakes just because they're not squeaky clean like Tim Tebow. That doesn't mean we shouldn't
you know, look at them as possible success stories of what they could possibly, you know, could be. Just because they've made mistakes, we've all made mistakes. And I think people think just because they make this much money, because they are famous, because they are celebrities, we expect them to act a certain way. But like Malcolm said, like you said, they're human beings. They're going to make mistakes. They're going to go to the club. They're going to act a fool. And because of the age of the social media, we can easily pull out a phone, boop, I got them on camera acting a fool and this, that, and the other, where, you know, that it's almost scary being a celebrity. You have no privacy. You never get privacy. And that's where it's hard being that balance between being a celebrity and normalcy, is that, you know, you're just a regular average Joe. Nobody cares what you're doing in your everyday day-to-day life, you know, besides your family, your friends, your loved ones. You're a celebrity. Everybody's in your business every single day. They know where you are, how much money you make, everything about you. There's no privacy at all. And, you know, that's the risk these guys take when they make that jump.
Indeed.
Yeah, y'all said it. We want to thank y'all again for tuning in to the Brother Lemon Sports Happy Hour. If y'all want to find our podcast, you can find us on Stitcher and iTunes under Black Is. We're part of the family of the Black Is podcast with the Black Is Break with KC Lehman and Coach Connection with Brother Malcolm. If you want to hit us up, you can call us 323-455-4219. You can email us, thebrotherslehman@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, @brotherslehman. I want to thank our guests for coming in. Rashani, you want to give your contact information about your podcast and where they can reach you?
I'm available on Twitter @Rashani, RASHANII. I'm not trying to fool people. And you can check out my three podcasts, Single Simulcast, The Dream Team, and Sin and Solace, at my website. Now, if you start listening to Sin and Solace, all that I ask is that you start listening to it from the very first episode, because it is a dramatic serial. It's in a bit of a hiatus right now because writer's block is real in these streets, but I know what I'm going to do and I'm going to go about doing it. You can also check me out on Facebook. I'm Rashani on there. I think I don't tend to answer too many friend requests because I'm like, I have enough friends on Facebook. I just want to live my life, but you never know, you might get lucky. You play Candy Crush, hit me up. I might be your supplier of lives and whatnot. But other than that, I'm just a real easygoing dude who's just trying to be the best family man he can. And God's blessed me to do that. So thanks for having me on, y'all. I appreciate it. Even though she's not here, I know she's floating around in the layman atmosphere somewhere. So shouts out to Miss Casey. And shouts out to my family for giving me the opportunity to do this show today. Thanks for having me on, y'all.
Yeah, no problem, man. Yeah, I'm always waiting for the new Sin and Solace. As soon as I see it, the new one on, I'm listening, man. I can't wait.
I have one. The finale is the one that I'm currently writing, the season finale, rather. And it's just like doing it, setting aside time to get it done when everything around me. I coach two youth basketball teams. My son plays football. My wife and I are always out and on the go and stuff. It's just hard to really sit down and get into that zone. But when it happens, it's going to happen. So thanks for listening, though. I really do appreciate it.
Of course, man. Yeah, we know how the grind is as podcasters and trying to live life, man. It's rough. But, yeah, Malcolm, you want to get your info?
Hey, what's going on, world? Thank you so much, first of all, to the Brothers Lehman and Rashani. Get at me after this podcast. We'd love to catch up with you, bro. It's a pleasure to meet you. And, I can be reached at Caliyeli on Twitter, CaliYeLie. And as you know, Brother Chris mentioned, we do have Culture Connection every Thursday, debuting the best in cultural arts, fine arts, culture around the country, but specifically and locally in Los Angeles. And, I'm just grateful and blessed to be able to do what I do. And thank you very much for the opportunity. It's a pleasure to rap with your brothers. All of you are doing wonderful things, and the world needs more of us. So you all well.
Yeah, of course, man. You know, we'll be getting y'all on, and we're getting to see the CEO family and probably one other Brother T, who's joining us on the Black Is Before. We're going to get this leg of podcast down, man. I want to hear y'all view on everything.
No, you don't.
Hey,
you know,
good man.
Jonathan absolutely wants to hear it. Jonathan wants to hear
everything. Yes, I do. I want to hear it. I want to hear it all.
I'm bringing in an army just for Jonathan.
You're going to have to, because I got ammunition up the yin-yang.
I need a drink before I do that show.
Jonathan's barricaded like Christopher Dorner. But you know what happened to him?
It's gonna be great, man. We covering the last few years. I want to do it from Phil Jackson's last year on management, coaches, players. What y'all think of these superstars? Dwight Howard, of course, Kobe Bryant, all of that. So yeah, we definitely gonna be going in. And hey, bring your feelings. Be honest. It's all good.
Hey, perfect. Once again, want to thank Brother Malcolm and Rashani for joining us on the show. From the Brothers Layman Sports Happy Hour, we've been your host, Chris and Jonathan. This is the Brothers Layman Sports Happy Hour, where we're giving it to you strong and it goes down smooth.
Take it easy, y'all.
Holla!
Dishonor. Strap the vest down tight when you bring the drama. Now raise up off mine and taste it in the roar. With more snipers on the floor galore in my hardware store. Nightmares of thirsty crooks. Niggas all acting fishy, working off the books. Paint the pictures of poverty, causing armed robbery, and it provoked every last one gets smoked. No doubt for real, it's like wildlife. With thugs forever, pull caps and always keep a knife. Cause on the strip, warfare's inevitable. Hot steel's incredible. And if surprised, the revolution won't be televised when I supply and demand. As I build my currency to expand. Call it progress when I bless my territory. All respect you, but can niggas keep it real? It's on you. It's on you, baby. To the dragon's lair, where CL's the Don and Pete's the creator. Now praise the most high and represent the best, cause the number one killer of black men is stress. The armed and dangerous, the bulletproof. Couldn't stop the homicide of another youth. Penetrating your body parts with hollow point shells, you fraud. Cause vengeance is mine, said the Lord. Indeed, my own clique now turns greedy. Out of 12 of my soldiers, one will deceive me. Put salt in the game, shame the family, and push my black ass straight into a terrifying ambush. The whole empire's at stake. Master in the streets, devil the mental won't break. And turn snake for Pete's sake. You gotta be true to the group. So if niggas wanna set it, it's on you. So set it on. Capture the beast within me. Beware when it's moving deep in New York City. The diabolical gangster chronicle mob scenes in all directions. The type of connections to get your wig split. Submit the wanted signs posted. Shaking spots for major knots, you get toasted. To the headpiece, I release firepower. Only I'm controlling. We put in work and got the right brothers rolling. When hell kicks off, we lick off. Keep in mind, hard like stone from the red zone. To each his own, smile in my face, behind my back you talk trash. Hope my pockets hit empty and my Lexus crash. But not in your wildest dreams. Hear my name in all the scandals and all the schemes. I rest in Queens, the Vernonville's my capital. So memorize the cuts to give you two more seconds to get off these nuts. It's on you. It's on you. It's on you.